This is the PoetryFoundation.org podcast for Thursday, April 27th. I'm Curtis Fox. Today, a tribute to Czesław Miłosz. Or is it Czesław Miłosz? I don't know. Even though they have a language and first and last names that are impossible to pronounce, Polish poets are doing quite well for themselves, internationally speaking. There's Wisława Szymborska. We featured one of her poems on this very podcast a few weeks ago. Then there's Adam Zagajewski, or Zagajewski, I don't even know. You can read about how his star has risen so spectacularly in recent years in a feature that just went up on the PoetryFoundation.org website. Then there's the unpronounceable Miłosz, perhaps the central figure in Polish poetry in the second half of the 20th century, and a winner of the Nobel Prize for Literature. He died just 2 years ago. For more than 20 years, he'd been a professor at UC Berkeley. A few weeks ago, in the Bay Area, for the anniversary of his death, there was a memorial celebration in honor of Miłosz held at the San Francisco Public Library. One of the speakers at that event was the journalist Mark Danner, who used to be a staff writer for The New Yorker, and more recently has been contributing articles about the war in Iraq to the New York Review of Books. Before reading a few Miłosz poems, he recapped the poet's extraordinary life.
I think when we talk about Czesław's life as a poet across 93 years, across our century, there is a tension between the lyricism of his art and the political that forced itself upon him. He remembered World War I. He traveled across Tsarist Russia in the back of a wagon with his father, who was building bridges and roads for the Tsar. He remembered the First World War. He lived through the Second World War in Anus Mundi, the asshole of the world, occupied Warsaw, and survived it. He lived to work for the Stalinist government and then break with it, and then live in exile in France among intellectuals who were predominantly Stalinist, so doubly exiled, with anti-communists who, of course, did not trust him. And then he came here and lived the Cold War on the other side of the Iron Curtain, as it were, and lived long enough to return to Poland, to return to Solidarity's Poland and then a democratic Poland at the end of his life. And it seems to me, in rereading his work, it's not the life he, needless to say, would have hoped for or would have predicted for himself. It wasn't his choice, I think, to write books. The most obvious one, and the name that the title that people will still hold out to you when you mention his name, is The Captive Mind, a very beautiful book and a deeply political book. He was, after all, a chaser after meaning. I want to read this poem, Meaning, which is very well known. When I die, I will see the lining of the world, the other side, beyond bird, mountain, sunset, the true meaning ready to be decoded. What never added up will add up. What was incomprehensible will be comprehended. And if there is no lining to the world, if a thrush on a branch is not a sign but just a thrush on a branch, if night and day make no sense following each other, and on this earth there is nothing except this earth, even if that is so, there will remain a word wakened by lips that perish, a tireless messenger who runs and runs through interstellar fields, through the revolving galaxies, and calls out, protests, screams. I want to read one other of his poems that strikes me as one of the most beautiful political, if we can call a poem of his political, poems he ever wrote. Which is called A Song on the End of the World. It was written in Warsaw in 1944, but I think it's very vivid to me now what he is saying here, which is we wait always for the visible catastrophe, but very often the catastrophe is going on all around us. Will there be civil war in Iraq, do you think? We don't know. You know, we wait for this moment that's always put into the future. A song on the end of the world. On the day the world ends, a bee circles a clover, a fisherman mends a glimmering net, happy porpoises jump in the sea, by the rain spout young sparrows are playing, and the snake is gold-skinned as it should always be. On the day the world ends, women walk through the fields under their umbrellas, a drunkard grows sleepy at the edge of a lawn, vegetable peddlers shout in the street, and a yellow-sailed boat comes nearer the island. The voice of a violin lasts in the air and leads into a starry night. And those who expected lightning and thunder are disappointed, and those who expected signs and angels' trumps do not believe it is happening now. As long as the sun and the moon are above, as long as the bumblebee visits a rose, as long as rosy infants are born, no one believes it is happening now. Only a white-haired old man, who would be a prophet, yet is not a prophet, for he's much too busy, repeats while he binds his tomatoes, there will be no other end of the world. There will be no other end of the world.
Mark Danner, reading at a tribute to Czesław Miłosz a few weeks ago at the San Francisco Public Library. The organizer of the tribute was poet Jane Hirschfield, who spoke about Miłosz's quest to contend spiritually with both good and evil.
What Henry James described as a literary necessity, that a writer be a person on whom nothing is lost, was, for Czesław Miłosz, a necessity of soul. He was a person in whom nothing was lost. And his appointed task was to give words and lasting form to the voracity of perception, feeling, and ethical and spiritual weighing that were in him. In a late poem, Capri, he wrote of hearing the immense call of the particular, despite the earthly law that sentences memory to extinction. Miłosz's work was to answer that call, to hold back extinction by creating for us a logbook and map of the awake and feeling soul.
Jane Hirschfield read the fourth poem in the series Miłosz called Six Lectures in Verse. It's a long poem about the disconnect between history, or so-called history, as the poem says, and the particular individuals who have suffered so cruelly in history's making.
Reality, what can we do with it? Where is it in words? Just as it flickers, it vanishes. Innumerable lives unremembered. Cities on maps only, without that face in the window, on the first floor by the market, without those two in the bushes near the gas plant. Returning seasons, mountain snows, oceans, and the blue ball of the earth rotates, but silent are they who ran through artillery fire, who clung to a lump of clay for protection, and those deported from their homes at dawn, and those who have crawled out from under a pile of bodies, while here I, an instructor in forgetting, teach that pain passes, for it's the pain of others. Still in my mind, trying to save Miss Jadwiga, a little hunchback, librarian by profession, who perished in the shelter of an apartment house that was considered safe but toppled down, and no one was able to dig through the slabs of wall, though knocking and voices were heard for many days. So a name is lost for ages, forever. No one will ever know about her last hours. Time carries her in layers of the Pliocene. The true enemy of man is generalization. The true enemy of man, so-called history, attracts and terrifies with its plural number. Don't believe it. Cunning and treacherous, history is not, as Marx told us, anti-nature, and if a goddess, a goddess of blind fate. The little skeleton of Miss Jadwiga, the spot where her heart was pulsating. This only I set against necessity, law, theory.
Jane Hirschfield, reading a poem by Czesław Miłosz at the memorial celebration held in his honor a few weeks ago at the San Francisco Public Library. You can get poetry news, features, and much, much more at poetryfoundation.org. Tomorrow on the poetryfoundation.org podcast, the story of the poetry assassination of Kenneth Koch.
Morpheus sleeps. Mercury or Murphy... Ah!
We always want to hear what you think of this program. Like it? Hate it? Have any suggestions? Really, email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this podcast comes from the Claudia Quintet. For the poetryfoundation.org podcast, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.